When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Yan fadog spadovi gannachnal an devoshn ni vakhmadyanish a kanakhmadyanish kesan devoshnan vakhskelorno shanskelan agishni noishna modivogoninskiy akhmatash yagamsan ok garashay shakh nurini sar agishni himoy usmar mi henar khalish bleshakhni kvaryakhonni kulyakla shtiyogan giyomno pisigan kharbut un yekles fodishyerni gyan marsh yakhogno
vaon. But I remember very well through Senator Joseph Connolly, who came from the same part of Ireland as I did, then the Glenjoe Antrim, and who arranged the matter. I had an interview with Mr. De Valera many years ago, to be exact, 1934. And it was the night of the budget, and officials were coming into him, into his room, and he was pushing them aside, and he talked about something. He talked about his youth, and when he was a boy, that he had heard folk tales told in English, of course, in County Limerick. And he went on talking, and then I couldn't, it was a tense moment for me, and I said, "Excuse me, sir, I don't speak the language of diplomacy. I have just one thing to say to you. The material is there, it's dying, and you know it. And you're interested in the Irish language, as I am. And I think it's about time something was done to put on paper or to record in some way the old tradition of a silent people who, as I said a moment ago, had so much to say. So please, take that pen in your hand and write, let it be done, and I'll do it, get other people to help me." And that's how the Folklore Commission started.
Seamus Ó de Lárga, sometime Honorary Director of an Comisión Béarlaidise, the Folklore Commission, and former Professor of Irish Folklore at University College Dublin. The man who guided the Commission in its task of saving for posterity the richest folk heritage in Western Europe. A post he held until recently, when the distinguished Swedish folklorist Dr. Bo Almqvist took over the helm.
Collections have been going on for a long time now. I think that some people may think that the collections are ended, but actually I believe that that is not so. I think that collections should go on very much on the same lines that it has always been done, and we are very happy to have all our staff of full-time collectors still with us.
The Folklore Commission was established in 1935. Its work was outstanding. It was a model for other European folklore institutes. Its primary purpose was not the arousal of interest in folklore, though it did that. Its job was to collect as much as possible of the enormously rich folk tradition while it still survived. This it succeeded in doing to a remarkable degree. All credit to the great precursors of the 19th and of the early part of the present century, Croker, The Wilds, the Dublin University Magazine, Patrick Kennedy, Joseph Lloyd, Douglas Hyde, Henry Morris. All credited them for individual efforts in saving the folklore of Ireland. But it needed a concerted effort to harvest it in bulk, indiscriminately even, before it was too late. Fortunately, there were men of vision in the Ireland of the mid-20s when the resurgence started.
But it all started with the Folklore of Ireland Society, and that society started because two men met once in Dublin. One was Fionnán McCullum, and the other was Pádraig McManus. Pádraig McManus was a wealthy Irishman, taught as a national teacher at one time, and through some disagreement or other with his superiors, decided to emigrate, and he went to Bolivia and the Argentine and made money, and was most generous with any Irish enterprise which he thought would be of advantage to the Irish people. And he was a friend of Fionnuala McCollum's, and I think the occasion was when the two met in, I speak open to correction now, in Jury's Hotel in Dublin. And Fionnuala put Pádraic into a corner, as he did with many other people before and afterwards, and said, listen, it's about time we had something was done here to record the story of the Irish people, the oral tradition of Ireland. Many people, of course, before that time had the same idea, but nothing had happened. There was never a society. There were attempts from time to time, which I have records, to found a society, to collect the tradition of Ireland, but nothing very much had come of it. And then a number of individuals, especially those associated with the Gaelic League, Joseph Lloyd and others, and they had, over the years, collected material and published it. And a great deal of credit is due to the Gaelic League for the work done in that particular field. But the man who started the Irish Folklore Society, or rather, as Dr. Hyde preferred the title to be, the Folklore of Ireland Society, which he suggested it, the man who really started it all was Fionnuala. The occasion was the meeting of two old friends in Jury's Hotel, and Fionnuala put McManus into a corner and said, listen, something's got to be done. And McManus said, how much, Fionnuala? He'd said it often before. So he gave £100. And with £100 and faith, this long-neglected enterprise, the Folklore of Ireland Society was founded.
Helped by De Valera in 1935, the real work began. The new Folklore Commission lost no time in starting its invaluable work. The Commission's field of inquiry was a wide one, as can be seen from its system of classification of the material collected. Settlement and dwelling, livelihood and household support, communications and trade, the community and household life, nature, folk medicine, time, principles and rules of popular belief and practice, mythological tradition, historical tradition, religious tradition, popular oral literature, sports and pastimes. These main headings were divided and subdivided in the mechanics of classification into hundreds of subsidiary heads. Sean O'Sullivan was the Commission's archivist.
At that time, I was a student in University College, and Professor DeLarghi offered me a post under the new Commission if I agreed to go to Sweden to study the methods used in the cataloguing of folklore at the University of Uppsala. So I went there in the month of March 1935 and stayed there until July. I had to learn some Swedish, but got great help from all the staff at the archive. Then when I came back in July 1935, Professor DeLarghi and I were busy for some years picking out full-time and part-time collectors who would do the work in the field. Then we saw by 1937 that small as Ireland is on the map, it is really a very, very big country when you set out to go collecting folklore. So we evolved a scheme by which we could use the children in the primary schools, the children in the senior classes. We approached the Department of Education, who were extremely agreeable and helpful. We approached the INTO, the teachers' organization, and after a number of meetings, a scheme was hammered out whereby the senior children in the primary schools would collect local traditions at home, following a little handbook which I drew up and which the Department of Education printed and sent to the various schools. And this scheme was put into operation to take the place of composition, as it had been until then, composition in Irish and in English. The children collected the material at home in the evenings, at weekends, and wrote it into their copybooks in school, and then transferred some of it into large standard notebooks which were sent out by the Department of Education, one to each school. In that way, we have now in the Department of Irish Folklore at University College, we have about 500,000 pages of material collected by the children between July 1937 and December 1938.
The school's collection is really fascinating. Invaluable information gathered and written by 12 and 13-year-olds from all over Ireland. For instance, local cures, warts.
Get a black snail in the meadow and rub him to the warts. Then stick him on a white thorn bush and a cording. As he is withering, the wart withers too.
Bedwetting.
Get a haymas and boil him in a saucepan of milk. When he is boiled, give the milk to the person afflicted with the disease. This has been known to cure many.
Old beliefs.
You should never cut a baby's nail in its first year.
You should never open an umbrella over you in a house.
You should never enter a house with a spade or any other implement on your shoulders.
You should never strike one with an elder stick.
You should never whistle in the house at night time.
You should never go to the well for water at night.
You should never burn a pack of playing cards.
You should never enter a house going from a funeral.
Many of these bits and pieces found their way into Bailidis, a magazine edited by Seamus O'Dellarga for close on 40 years. Not these alone, I need hardly add, but scholarly articles written by experts on folk tradition and material gathered by the Commission's full-time and part-time collectors in the field. Here's a folk tale gathered by Toby Kavanagh, a teacher living in the Roar, County Kilkenny, from an old farmer's wife 40 years ago.
There was a boy one time, and he had a hump on his back, the boy had. And the way he had for living is fishing with a fishing rod every day. A gentleman's daughter used to buy all the fish he used to catch, trout, seals and everything. He should come home through wood every night when he'd be coming home. He was coming this night and there was three men cobbling old brogues, they called them lorikans, and three lamps with them in the ditch. The boy come up to him and he says, "Oh, Lord, you're working very late." "Ash, what can poor men do?" says one of them. "You must give me some money now," says the boy to them. "Oh, where'll we get money for you?" says another of them. "Well," says the boy to him, "you must give me the money, whatever." So one of them said, "Do you see what's running up the tree?" says he. So when the boy looked behind him, they were gone. The boy come home to the mother and he told her what he met in the wood. "Well," she says, "you're the luckiest man in the world," she says to him, "if ever you see them again, because anyone meets them, they give him a lot of money." About a fortnight's time again he was coming, and they were cobbling again, and he bethought of what the mother said, not to look behind him, you know. And he come up to the men again, and he said, "You're working very late again tonight." He bethought of what the mother said, not to look behind him for his life. They told him there was fire behind him and everything, and he would not look behind him, no matter what they'd say. And in the long run, they slashed him on the ground for a long time. When he opened his eyes, the ground and all around him was covered with money, and the hump and all gone off his back. He come home to the mother, and the mother didn't know who he was. They brought out the box the next morning early, and they filled it with the money, and they brought it home to the house. He married the gentleman's daughter he used to be selling the fish to. Another fellow then had another hump on his back, and he asked him how did he get the hump off his back. He said he met little men in the wood, and they took the hump off his back, and that's the only way he could get it off. So this fellow then, he met them fellas in the wood some night again, and he was asking the money like the other of them, and they slashed him on the ground again. And when he got up, he had two humps on his back.
Stories such as that were collected in their hundreds by the likes of Michael J. Murphy, who has given a lifetime service to the Commission.
Well, I suppose I came to be associated with the former Folklore Commission by chance. I'd written a book called At Slievegullion's Foot, and it dealt with folklore, and it was a collection of articles and things like that about the Slievegullion country. And then Professor Delaghi, when he read it, asked me would I care to collect on a part-time basis in our own area, which I did. Then later on he asked me to go through the Mourns, which I did. I spent about 2 years walking through it, and meanwhile got married, and then about 1949 asked me to go to the Glen Hull country. That's the foothills of the Spurns in Tyrone. And my wife came with me to see, and we had a young family. And it was important because you have to integrate yourself into a community. You know, it's more the people getting to know you and what you're after rather than you're getting to know them, and it takes time. You can't rush this thing. Well, from Tyrone, we went to Antrim, to a place called Laid outside Cushendall. And from that to Ballycastle to collect in the North Antrim. And from there I went over to Rathlin for a few years. And then back to the Mourns again. And from there I collected through the remainder of the Mourn country around Kilbrony and up there. I'm sure I met the last of the real folk storytellers, a man called Dan Rooney, since dead. And across the loch, Omeath, Cooley, Carlingford. And from that, I went to up the Clarehead country, all round there, and into Loud, town of Loud, Rhys Town, that's the Wild Goose Lodge area, all through Monaghan. And at the moment, I'm in Cavan, Gleetum and Sligo. But I'm back living in the Slievegullion country, so I'm like the hare in the chest. You know, the folk story says when the hare is hunted from the den, it'll always come back to it. And the hare's a good symbol for the folk tale anyway.
Under the expert guidance of Ode Largo, Kevin Danaher and Sean O'Sullivan, the Commission's collection grew and grew. In the ethnographical section of the archive, Kevin Danaher gathered 25,000 photographs, plans, sketches and diagrams of the visible aspect of tradition. The library, under Dr. Tom Wall, now houses more than 20,000 books. But the main bulk of information amassed by the Commission consists of manuscript or typescript copies of traditions which had previously been preserved by memory and transmitted orally from one generation to another, and was, for the first time, written down from the recital of mainly middle-aged or elderly informants. Luckily, the birth of the Commission coincided with the birth of the era of the recording machine. Leo Cardoff is in charge of sound recording at the department.
The bulk of the material was recorded in the Gaeltacht areas, from Donegal right around the coast to Mayo, Galway, Clare, Kerry, right around into Waterford. We got a mixture of folk tales, song, and the music. We've got recordings of songs, ballads, pipe music. I remember one great piper, Johnny Dorn. Johnny was regarded as being one of the best pipers in the country. He was killed in an accident. We've got a few of his recordings, unfortunately not enough. We've, as I said earlier on, about folk tales told by various people in different parts of the country.
Sheshkiel Agarima Fado Egethardar Wanam Pado He Harach Nakana Forest Rang Bujagas Gierskirk Taviksha Shanana Harna Truhut Moel Lumini. We first rang darwanam ta shano breed. Agus tairigda tri ihni e chéle wachse karn mŵr aregit ar gruhat mŵr lumini. Dima seles agus sukse rwúr na tri la e siú siis agus suas agus nans na gara druhat. Trach nuna an tri gulae hanik sianar lia chygia. Gom pardona gudar san sianar les. Hama fechant ar ta siugan san isle tri la. Agus bing bwchtid da nus fagam kadahatu gianaon. Bech nair ar mwy gainsyndas, ar sygin faron rhaeg. Nisht mwy ar sygin siandan y liach, ni gan ys ein di waldas. Nisht yn sgiag yn sonda gyrhoedig do tri hyn i eichele, wach se carn mwyr ar eich gyda'r drwhwt sa. Gwydw gwydw i eichildas ar sygin siandar, liach. Ar nhw hoedig yn rwyd cian ag ymhwy. Ach se oed yr hoedig dwysa y wyng yn targed, na yng ngardin yn vrianag sy'n Ir ligin brina chairda, ach wukse buhur wale o margus te gietse. Agus narahanigin nuihe, kuse agus nisien skialda gynigas na kursin, agus ugdur pikuud, agus raan, agus luasik loham, agus wuladar maksin ardiin, agus ramadar polo, agus nir wada vidraan, nar wuladar lak, hogadar an lak, agus wuladar kruiskiin muur oor hiiswuham. Ringedur yn targed agos ni'r ein la bwcht ac ydywaredur.
Irish still lives in the parish where Micheál Ócineála recorded that story. The sad thing about collecting folklore, however, is that very often one is collecting the last of something priceless. This is an Edifone recording of Paddy Power of Glenmore, County Kilkenny, the last native Irish speaker of that county. It was made in 1936. Kevin Danaher it was who made the only recordings ever made of the last of the great travelling pipers. Johnny Doran came to Dublin on his way from Wexford just after the war and pitched his tent by a wall in Churchtown. A few days after these recordings were made, the wall fell in a gale, and perhaps the greatest piper, certainly the greatest reel player ever recorded, was killed. The Commission placed a special emphasis on the Gaeltacht tradition. Listen to Peg Sayers talking about her life on the Blaskets.
Saint to Don Moore, and bow a stitch of the will left on Satamra. Ach for real year, a shan bow as Nasach and Cornea on the will it will bring a down wood air again. Neil Faskina for him, O Ayan Teen da the quick own. Neil for him on me do ignore Nasach. Begin teen gishiri bulish taxi viale. Tasha dienta, ten marvech meal moor. A vech nahola er bar na faragin a cune. The hugus lahia blien them hail own. sawn a bhí hógas mar leanaí. Giléir, a bhí sé go fúnta agus a bhí sé go duna féin mar deire seansaíal. Ní raibh sa bhá bhás gan dó bhás á chéinte. A bhí bhrón féin agus a bhá bhás féin le húmpar a gis gach duine ann agus le gháil tíir. De lean ann ró múir na fís mar de bhí díis mó samaíhe. As bine cíhe a chas mo héal gan tóiréin labaid ach isteach agus amach. An gaithe dúig agus an iar dúig a leagan tí oram agus mó gaiine a mo héde bára agus gan súil ge díhin ge dior éistir. Da haga díis chóm de a cawr dé ar madin go súite fluch tnáite trés na híhe. Es minic ar vigán dá bára. Íhan tala bí chlúch sa éhidikó. Ach is go fada fána chaisin. Ach is go masam, na náit go mien kúna yirgane. Bín che sásta leis, náit go meis a tógan te lanam, agus a kýrin tair dó, is a náit is tisil le seia. Bibí se un dóch go máchan sa taunra, na re bwilech na dýni weis legus na kúrtóri hi trasna. Bibí ich so gásar na dýni óga bich rinke agus kúl agus aidi nárdiku, Er taga náma padi bícha saunra agus na kúrta uri hitaag. Sigini rida bích kiúl agus rinke agus aurán agus diversin a kutaini kuma. Da bída raun lón baliku. Da nskín lum guma. An chiad vlíni pósas agus a chuska dien bloska ed mūrchan kūnahe. Da bích hūč līmān diaga lūska lanab. Da bílán an taumsan. Bí tík skulaun agus da bích šī lónda sklāti. Ufada le trí fihit skláte. Bích mô góhid kúri meri mún tóir, gál tríra. Bécan na lana i klíšte. Ní rád pín biarlako agas bo yukar ola sa húrto manára tahir biarlako na a chudri bukuir na a chlosa kuir. Ea no kol biarlako sa a lópi yad gadi garaidi si štachar skuir. Agas o akadi skuir, ní chlosi dish po kol biarlano gadi garaidi dish gatigna skuala raisht. Ach, Da bí géirí le ó go hálaid, nó go dí gur hánig an tula bhuasal. Coramacó caili agus a sin éon taum díirecha cureach chlár an dá hangan ar bunt sa scoil. Da bí cudas na buachalí bega a bhídal ar scoil, da ghlacad ar saim búar an sa teangan sin agus an sa ghaelan. Da bí díis díilis don an mún tóid agus cégar minicio gari díis cara gari ní ná chuntuk. Da bích sé díilis dóg da bí mún tóir maha guinan taumsan gan ár na díat trókari rannam agus rannam an amarab.
Peg Sayers. The commission employed two full-time collectors of Irish folk song for several years. From the Glens of Antrim to Dún Huin they ranged, and in Donegal they met a travelling man who could not only tell a good story but play the fiddle at the kitchen dances as well. His name was Mickey Doherty, and he was a great character by all accounts.
There was an old fiddle player one time lived in Glenfinn, and he only had the two tunes. But he was asked to go to a dance to Letterhillow, a town land they call Letterhillow. And on his way going, he had the fiddle with him, and he didn't care for going, he only had the two tunes. And as he was going along a lonely part of the road, there come a wee red-haired man out afore him. And the wee man asked him where he was going. He said he was going to a dance in Letterhillow when he would far rather not go and count to him only having the two tunes, and he knowed there would be a big crowd there, and it would be hard to play them in music. So the wee man said to him, What kind of a fiddle, he says, have you with ye? So he took the fiddle out from under his coat and he showed the fiddle to the wee man. And the wee man examined her. And he run his fingers across the strings three times and he handed the fiddle back to them. Well, go on, says, see, to this fiddle player, says he, go on, he says, and don't be cowardly, he says, and go on to the dance, he says, the night, he says, there'll be no other fiddle player there, he says, lucky. So on he went, And when he come into the dance house, there was a very big crowd. And he took his set to play for them. And when he drew out the fiddle, he drew the bow on her. And she was twice as loud. And there wasn't a tune of 100 tunes but he had. They all got up to dance and they said they never heard a fiddler in this world like him. So he played on to the morning. And in fact, he was able to raise the roof of the house with music. But he was the best fiddle player was supposed to be in this county. And he was a good fiddle player all his life and lived to be very old. And when he took death, on his deathbed, the fiddle was hung above him, for he was lying. And when he departed, the fiddle busted on the wall. The fiddle busted on the wall when he departed. He was the name of Hurden. He was from a townland called Garwin Hill.
Leo Carduff, the research folklorist in charge of recordings, is following in his father's footsteps, for Mihalo Koroviv from Rostuch, County Mayo, was one of the commission's collectors. Let's eavesdrop on him as he talks to a neighbour, Johnny Nachten, about the farming traditions of his district.
Panach lóg, agus i gúin úid wáir, fí bhaltaine.
Nó sá.
Agus i gúin Chimokhor. Kushigul wash. Na khaji la shukh ti ne shmar.
Sige menesh. Well, dokti tono gyor.
Ja, ki tono gin shna
unda. Ki di dokti fi ha.
Ja, fi ha. Ha.
Tort fast.
To rosna gugu chikolo hova in yele u hortin in sitin.
In sitin.
Ha.
Sige menesh.
Kushkama chin shop hasku. Ara vafen do.
Usha. Well, Tornogi hooked your
Tornogi,
or Makidi. August, well, Skrasker Kurtrononi don't, eh? Smooth Jacardini Barrow Kir of Kusha.
Joel Jacoby, you know, succeed my hood.
Yeah,
succeed my hood.
See him and us. Well, tell him what a wood war, Granny Barrow Kir of.
You're a little bit. Kutil, Dan, Kutil, Olin Shuninchi, Bala, and Sinolin.
No, in Shin?
Ah, no, you bet you could ask me.
Oh, you
bet you could ask me.
The Commission had its faults, being a human institution. It's often said that it should have made its recordings public, but it should be emphasised that collecting was the Commission's main purpose. It simply hadn't got the resources, human or financial, to make all or even much of its collected lore available to the public. But nobody can deny that an Commission Beldidisa has done tremendous work, and the dedicated people who did it have never failed to acknowledge the part played by the ordinary people of Ireland in their task of collecting and preservation.
I am the most dissatisfied of all because I realise that what we did under great difficulties, with indifference and frustration very often our lot, but consoled by one outstanding feature which must be emphasized, the heartfelt and persistent and unremitting cooperation of the ordinary people of Ireland, the silent people who had so much to say, and nobody had ever asked them to say anything. The world that we faced was a world obscured by blethers. It's a good, honest to God, North Antrim word. And I use it deliberately. There was too much talk and not enough action. And we faced it, that situation.
The question now remains, is there much left to collect?
Well, yes, there is. You know, each area you go to, now I've about 30 years, and once you go into an area, people will say, ah, if you'd only been here 10 years ago, or even 5 years ago, such a fella. Nevertheless, there's somebody there who has it. And even today now, where I am in Glengevlin and around Glenfarn, or even in Lake Sui around Sligo, places like that, or Ballinagleer above Loch Allen, they say the same thing. Nevertheless, I'm getting these masses of material, meeting people with folklore and folk stories, people that they didn't suspect had this information. Some of these people are very shy, and it takes time to find them out, and I suppose one develops an instinct for this. You have a feeling that a certain man or woman has this material, and they're afraid of appearing foolish or ridiculous. And of course you have to get over these inhibitions, because into the countryside, even more so even today, the people do not want to admit that they know folklore, because it's been equated with mental backwardness, social backwardness and all this kind of thing. And things like this, you know, occasionally on the air, it is helping them. Or little things printed. They do like it, but they need to be assured of its value, you know, its purpose. I say, for instance, it's the way I look at it and explain that we are collecting in the present day, on the products of the past for the purposes of the future. No, even there in Black Lion and Cavan, I've met a young man from the Cavan for Manor border. Incidentally, I get material from, to not use this phrase, all religions and classes. And he's a wonderful folk storyteller. Nobody suspected this. And he's a man about 59. Wonderful. So it still comes up.
There are people who don't like the word folklore. They prefer something like local history. Would you agree?
Yes, I suppose so. Again, it's the that inferiority complex about the word folk and folklore, that it's equated always with the backward people. And local history seems to elevate it a bit socially, do you know? But we explain all this, that as well as local history would be confined to certain elements in an area, whereas I explained to them that folklore is the history of the people, told by the people themselves for the first time. That conventional history, you see, kings, princes, principalities and all that, they've neglected about 98% of the people. And we not only want the tales the people can tell, but the details of their lives, living and everything, and their fathers, grandfathers, as far back as they can remember, the houses they lived in, how they dressed, implements they used, what they said, what they thought, prayers they used, complete life. You know, it's a vast and intricate social survey now, that's what it is. So it extends a wee bit further, I would say, than the confines of pure local history.
The commission is now a university department, and the man who succeeded Seamus of the Lairga, Bu Almquist, has his plans for the future.
I think that there are opportunities here in Ireland that you will not have anywhere else of seeing how tradition changes and develops. To see, for instance, in the Gaeltacht areas, what traditions disappear, what remains there, and what is adopted to new conditions. Also, we have got in our collections a great deal of material from people who are now dead, but their sons and daughters are still alive, and I think it's important to talk to them, collect from them, and see how the material changes from generation to generation. As you know, we are also now, for the first time, starting teaching of folklore. Folklore is a honor subject, second and third year, and we have got 5 pupils. It's a very small number, all right, but it is a beginning.
We have time for one further example of the folk tale. This is from the magazine Bailidis. It was collected in County Kilkenny by Toby Kavanagh.
There was a man and a woman in it one time. They had only one son. They was living between two mountains, and the name the man went by always was the Knight of the Glen. The son said he'd go seek his fortune, what you said he losing his time in a little cabin that way. So he started off this morning to look for work. And he got lodging this night in a house. He was dressed, you know, in his best, you see. The man of the house asked him, was he a labouring man? And what sort of a man was he? He said he was a coachman. He travelled away the next morning out of that house again. And he got lodging then in another house that night again. The man asked him, was he a labouring man, or what way had he for a living? So he said he was a coachman. The man told him there was a gentleman's house only a few fields from him, and he might keep him. They always keeps a coachman, he said. The next morning he went down to the house. There was no one at home but the lady herself and all the servants. He went in and he asked for a drink. He said to the cook he was tired. He was after a bath and everything. Could he rest himself? The cook went up and the lady said he could stay as long as he liked. He was some poor fellow after a bath. So he got his breakfast. He was whistling, going about the yard and everything. And the lady was above stairs in the window watching him. He was bringing in sticks and everything for the cook. He stayed in the hall of the day in it, and then he stayed that night in it. The next morning, he was a peddler again, and he come in. He was whistling and going about the yard at day again. And it wasn't long when the lady herself come down. And he took a hold of her. The cook said he'd be hung. She was a lord's daughter. Well, if she's a lord's daughter, I'm a knight's son, he said. The lady told the cook not to say anything at all to him. He was only a wild young filly. The lady couldn't be kept out of the kitchen then at all. The father was home then the next day. The lady told the father he was a knight's son. The father and himself fell into discourse. He said he should send one of his men to see the place. The father gave one of his men a horse, a bridle and saddle, and he was going off and the boy met him. Well, now, says he, you're going away, and you're the man able to do all for me, and if you do that for me, I'll make a gentleman of you all the days of your life. So the man said he would. He started off, whatever, and he was inquiring for the knight of the glen. He met a man on the road, and he told him where the house was. So he went up, whatever. There was no one there but the old man and the old woman, 10 goats and a puckhorn. They thought it was the son was after coming home again to them. And the man told them that the son would be soon home again. He tied the horse in the yard. What they had for their dinner was oaten bread and goat's milk. The old man put up a board across his 2 knees for a table, and then they had 3 stones for 3 chairs to sit down and eating off the old man's knees. And while he was eating, there was then Hardnick men playing music at the door. So he had no more then to see, only all the mountains, and he come home. He brought him down in the room to tell him all. He asked him, had he a gradle of land? The man said what land he had wouldn't be truer than a fortnight galloping horse every day. All the mountains, don't you know. And the table, he said, we dined off. He wouldn't give it to you for what you're worth. And there was 10 Hardnick men playing music while he was eating. So they were married, whatever, then, in a few days. Then the Lord says, this day, 'twould be time for you to take your lady to acquaint her with your people, he said. So the fellow said he had only a little cabin. He had no place to bring her. The boy made up the fella that done all the work for him. The gentleman got bad. He was taken in so nice. And he died, whatever. I don't know what way they went on after that.
The commission is no more. On the 28th of September 1971, it became Rhine Valley de Sairn at University College Dublin. On that occasion, Professor de Largy quoted a passage from a book on Northern Canada, not inappropriate in the present context. My journey was over, but I was still tied to the place. Not by the simple web of memories alone, but by something more powerful. There was, and is, an abiding affection in my heart for the men and women who lent me their eyes, so that I was privileged to look backwards through the dark void of dead years, and to see not only the relic of forgotten times, but also into the minds and thoughts of the men of those times. It was a great gift I had from the people, and one that deserved a repayment. An Commission Bailey Dissa has helped in large measure to repay.